Hello, 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 and welcome to the College Investor Live. I am excited to be here with Deacon Hayes from Well-Kept Wallet, and we are going to be talking about paying off debt, getting debt-free in 2023. We're going to talk about how to deal with that in the face of inflation and, you know, a lot of the risks that we're seeing in the economy right now, job losses, uncertainty. I guess, you know, it's not necessarily risky, but there is a lot of uncertainty out there. And so we're going to dive in and we'll get started with that. But if you're not familiar with Well-Kept Wallet, it is a phenomenal website to help you get out of debt, transform your financial life. I love Deacon's philosophy on it in terms of, you know, there's a lot of ways to do it. You don't have to, there's no one path, right? Like we're probably going to go down like seven different paths, I think, today in this conversation, all the different things you can do. And yeah, if you have a question for either of us, you want to talk about getting out of debt, budgeting, side hustles, earning more money, I'm sure all of these are going to be tangential to our conversation today. Drop a question in the chat and we would be happy to answer it for you. But Deacon, do you want to, you know, say a few words, introduce yourself, and we'll go from there.
Sure. So thanks, Robert, for having me on. You know, one of the things that I am most known for is paying off $52,000 of debt in 18 months, my wife and I. And so that's the thing that kind of led us on this journey of, hey, how could I help other people do the same thing, right? So if you're struggling with debt and you're like, hey, I don't want to hang around forever, like that's what I love to do is help people figure out a path to do it in the shortest period of time. And so just excited to dive into this today. I know we got some really crazy economic times with egg prices being like three times as much and houses costing double the price and interest rates and all that stuff. So just glad to tackle any questions people have and just grateful to be here with you today, Robert.
I love it, man. Well, thanks for joining me today. I mean, let's get started with the basics. I mean, we're in February 1st, which one, I can't believe that we've already gone through a month of January, but you know, getting out of debt tends to be a lot of people's New Year's resolutions. You know, a lot of people also look to maybe using their tax refunds to like pay some of that debt down. But this year, tax refunds might be a lot smaller because of all the tax credits and things that have changed. Like, what is like the most practical way for someone to get started that's like overwhelmed? Because I mean, you've been there. I have had a little bit of debt, student loan debt. It can be really overwhelming. And especially if you have a large amount, it almost feels like you can't really make progress. And I feel like we're in this age of instant gratification where like, if it's not gone in like a month, right? Like, I feel like I failed because like, that's what we live in. So what's the first step?
Yeah. So the first step is just to list all of your debts, right? That was the first thing that we did. And the reason why that matters is sometimes we forget, oh, I've got that credit card or I've got that medical bill, right? Or we don't even put like maybe our car in the equation. But that car payment could be $600, $700 a month and could be really a difficult situation to pay off debt when you have $1,000 in other debt payments to make. So really just putting it all on paper. And the method that we use and that I personally like the most is the debt snowball method, where you pay off all of your debt, smallest to largest, regardless of the interest rate, because you get small wins fast and it helps you keep motivated to keep going. So that's the main one. The other one's the debt avalanche, and definitely glad to go into that one as well, Robert, if you think that's worthwhile.
Yeah. I mean, what are these like debt snowball, debt avalanche, you know? Well, I guess even before we get to the tactics, what is your favorite way to get organized? So like for me, I'm a tech guy. So I like apps. You know, I used to meticulously track all of my finances in Quicken, and I used to track the income and the expenses. And I'm a fan of that, but I know that style doesn't fit everybody. And I feel like that could be a barrier, like to some people.
Yeah, I think so. The first starting place, because it's so accessible, is, you know, a pen and paper. The second starting place would be if you're an Excel person, like creating Excel spreadsheet. We've got a free debt snowball form that's absolutely free, no upsell. But the idea is it calculates everything for you. But so those are like the simple, like, hey, here's how to like put it on paper. I personally like the app Personal Capital for tracking everything. So retirement, debt, any, you know, budgeting, all that kind of stuff. So that's a tool that I found the most helpful. I thought it was interesting you said Quicken, because that seems so old school to me now.
It's so old school.
Now with like, you know, Personal Capital or Mint, you know, these apps seem to be so robust and so easy to use nowadays.
I think you nailed it though, is that you need to do your organization in a way that's comfortable for you, because if you don't do it in your own style, you're not going to stick to it. So if you're a techie person and you like your technology, I would say try some of these apps out. There's a lot of free ones. There's also some paid ones. You know, there's different ones. But if you're not an app person, don't try to like force yourself to use an app because you're just not going to stick with it, right? So maybe you are an Excel spreadsheet master. Well, then maybe that's the best way that you should go about it. And there's actually some integrations with that. I can think of Tiller comes to mind, right? Like they like have free, I don't know if they're free, but they're paid macros that'll import all your data into your spreadsheet, right? And then you always have pen and paper and a calendar. I always think of some people in my family that this is their jam, is that they literally like make a calendar and they like chart out when certain bills are due. And like, that's the style that they have to do. But you know what? If you don't do it in your style, you can't get to the next step, which is making that decision, which is now, okay, we know what we have. How do we get out? And you just talked about two to start with. You said the debt snowball is your favorite, the debt avalanche there. These are like the strategies. Like once you know what you got, what are these strategies? Like, how would you like lay it out there?
Yeah. So I'd say I would call myself a simple person, right? Like I just want you give me a strategy that's simple to use and I can execute it. So that's what I feel like the debt snowball was really effective. Now, the other method is the debt.
What is this debt snowball? Like, how do you do it? Like, what's the implementation of it, right?
So when you're listing your debts, you're going to list your smallest debt first, then your next smallest debt, all the way down to your largest debt. And the whole idea is you're just going from smallest to largest, regardless of how much interest rate that particular debt is. And what you do is you pay minimum payments on everything except the first debt. The first debt you tackle with a vengeance. So any extra cash, if you get a tax refund, if you have, you know, you get a bonus at work, whatever it is, you're throwing it at that first debt. Once that debt's paid, you roll the money you were paying on the first debt into the second debt, hence the debt snowball. And that just keeps getting bigger, right? You have more money every time you pay off a debt to pay off the next debt until it's all gone. So that's kind of how the debt snowball works.
I like it. So that's the whole premise, right? Is that, isn't it like a psychological, like, isn't this like the best psychological path, I think, statistically, right? Like, because you're eliminating debt, like you feel good. And then you can keep doing the process over and over and over again until you're out of debt, right? But the avalanche is a little different. It's like the mathematically better one. But like, you want to break that one down?
Yeah. So the debt avalanche, and they're both good methods. And so kind of to Robert's point, it's like, what's best for you? If you're extremely numbers and detail oriented and you're disciplined, you know, you might actually save more money with the debt avalanche. But I've just found there was even a Harvard Business Review study done of the debt snowball method with 6,000 people. And they found that to be the most successful way to pay off debt because it just encouraged and motivated people to keep going. But if you're kind of one of those persons, like I said, that's disciplined, number oriented, really like sticks to it. The debt avalanche is where you list your debts by the highest interest rate. So if you have a credit card that's 20% and you have a personal loan that's 14%, and then you have a car loan that's 7 or 8%, you're listing the highest interest rate first. The reason why that can be the most effective is because you're tackling the debt that's costing you the most first in the equation. The only caveat I'd say with that is if you have a high interest rate debt, that's a lot of money. Let's say that it's $20,000. It will feel like taking forever to pay it off versus let's say you had a medical bill for $500 and it's a 0% interest, but you could just knock it out right away in 1 month and feel like, oh, I'm making progress, right? So you just kind of have to know yourself and say, hey, am I willing to wait, you know, for kind of a long time to get my first success and I have that discipline, then the debt avalanche might be the best way for you. If you are like, hey, just give me a simple plan to execute, and something that's going to give you quick wins fast, then the debt snowball would be a great option to choose.
And that's great. And I think it goes back to the psychology, but I also want to share too, like, you know, you can't really go wrong with either of these. I want to say that, I forget who it was, but they like penciled it out with like 10 different examples over like 10 years. And like you, even with like a high interest debt on one or another, it's like you were only like $1,000 more in difference over 10 years, like across different methods, because you're still eliminating the debt. You're still paying more. You're still getting it off, paid off faster. So I think, you know, pick the one that you're most comfortable with. I like the small wins too. Like, yes, maybe it's not mathematically like optimal to like the penny, but at the same time, if you're having success with it, like do it, eliminate those debts. But I think, you know, part of these is like you have to find this extra money potentially to throw at either the littlest debt or the first debt you're tackling. So like, where is that coming from? Like, right? What are your thoughts? Like, where are you getting this money from?
Yeah. And so I can speak from personal experience and then also from coaching a lot of people over the years. You know, you have to kind of take an inventory of your time and say, hey, what excess time do I have? And what can I do in that time to make some extra money? So for me, at the time we're paying off our debt, I had nights and weekends available. I had a typical job where I'm working 9 to 5. So I'm like, hey, I could deliver pizzas and wings at night, essentially. And so I did that. And then I have a grandma that was really into antiques. And so she would go to yard sales and she'd buy antiques and flip them on eBay. And I was just blown away. She'd buy like this coin silver pot for 10 bucks and sell it for like $1,000 on eBay. And I'm like, what in the world is this life? Right. So I'm like, I don't know anything about antiques, but I know stuff about electronics. So I'm like, hey, I would go and I would scan a router. Like they have the box and it'd say, how much is this selling for on Amazon? 60 bucks. I'd ask them how much they want. They say $5. I'm like, okay, I got to put in the work. But I made 50 bucks after, you know, shipping and fees, et cetera. So it's like, what excess time do you have? What can you do with that time to bring in extra money to kind of make that snowball even faster? So that's one way. Another way could be asking for a raise. Maybe you worked at a place for a long period of time. You've added a lot of value and you just have to kind of lay it out to your boss and say, hey, here's what I've done. And I really love working for this company. But my expenses have changed since I started and I really need to be here. And so, you know, try to craft a conversation where you can get a raise in your current organization. So there's lots of ways you can get some extra income. And those are kind of two that just come to mind.
I love it. I think that whole first base there is like, look at your time. Now we've organized our money, right? You figured out the organizational strategy that works. You also need to think about your calendar and your time and your season of life, right? Because like we all come through different seasons. You know, when you're 18 to 24 and don't have kids yet and a family, you have probably a lot more time. And so maybe how are you leveraging that time to your advantage? And, you know, it could be more challenging when you have children. You know, maybe this isn't the season of life where you can do some extra, but maybe there's other things you can do in terms of cutting expenses, budgeting, things like that. You really have to look at it and you have to get creative. And that's the hard part. There's no one size fits all because we do have different things. But I will say that in, you know, 10 plus years of talking to people and coaching people, Deacon, I have the same conversations and coaching. And whenever I get to the time piece, I have challenged probably over 100 plus people of show me your time and show me your money and we can talk about your options. And nobody ever wants to bring their calendar to the table. Because I think that's where people kind of, you know, that's where that roadblock I really do think is when it comes to, you know, getting out of debt is like, how are you leveraging your time? Whether that's your time at work, your time outside of work, your time with your family. Are you spending money in those times? Are you earning money in those times? What does that look like? So I do think time is a huge one. We can get to side hustles for sure. I also, you said using your employer, you know, asking for a raise. Jerry Brown just dropped this question in the chat and said, what about asking your employer to help? And I do have some thoughts on this. My first thought is most people should not necessarily go to their employer and ask for a raise. Most people should change their jobs. They should go and get another job at a competitor. So there was a Harvard Business Review paper done on this and that people that stay with the same employer for more than 5 or 10 years, I forget what the exact number was, were over 20% underpaid compared to their peers. And the problem is, and I saw this when I was working in the corporate world too, is that your employer, like, most employers are stingy when it comes to raises. They give you like a 5%, 7% raise, and that's barely keeping up with inflation these days. I think most people are going to have financial success going to their competitor and jumping ship and getting a 30, 40% pay raise, and then doing that for 2 years, and then jumping to another competitor or jumping back into their industry. But I also think there's some tactics there that you could use at your current employer. So if you work at a large Fortune 500 company, a lot of them offer things like, you know, student loan repayment assistance programs. They offer things like tuition reimbursement. So depending on the type of debt, which I do want to talk about in a little bit, is that how do you tackle, there's different types of debt, and I feel like we should talk about them differently. but there might be options from your employer to help you with your debt. What do you think, Deacon?
Yeah. So I know that recently, and I think you might be more up to date on the details, but part of the Secure Act 2.0 was that employers will be allowed to take contributions to put towards student loan debt repayment, right? So like actual employers will be able to help you pay down student loan debt, and there will be a vehicle or a mechanism in which they can do that. So that is an option, right? So kind of maybe go to your HR department and say, hey, what options are available, right? Maybe that is something that they're working on and you could be one of the first people to benefit from it. I do love the idea of going to like looking at what your employment options are, right? So not being kind of tied to one employer, like you're saying, Robert. I do know that people... like my wife does not like change, right? Like she would love to work at, like, you know, when she was working, she just wanted to work at the one place and she had like all the relationships and systems and all that stuff, right? So that's really hard sometimes. So I think that's also a knowing yourself type of deal. But like you said, it can be very lucrative, right? Because maybe you are being undervalued and underpaid and there is a competitor that would love to have you, right? And so if that's something that you're interested in, by all means, go after it.
It's so hard because I dealt with this personally when I worked at Target for so long, is that, you know, they were so corporate in their 5% raises, 7% raises. There was a matrix, like you do this, you get this. And that was it. And that's why I also saw a lot of people, and I valued that comfort. I thought the job was easy. I knew exactly what I got and I was side hustling. And so that was my path to making more money, just like you were. But you know, I saw so many of my peers jump ship to Amazon and jump ship to Walmart because they were instantly getting 20% pay raises or more just right away. And there was no way to do that in the corporate structure because like it was so corporate. Like they just couldn't like think outside the box to give people raises that weren't inside that matrix. And I think that's where the, you know, you might have a little more flexibility, a small company, but when you get to these big companies, they just, and you know, public enterprises, government jobs, like, you know, it's like you're in that matrix and you're not leaving the matrix, right?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, that's the reality of the corporate world, right? They have like these are the adjustments we're going to do every year. And it's based off of these metrics and you might be in a box. The other thing we didn't talk about is, you know, I left the corporate world to become an entrepreneur. And I know you did too, Robert, right? So it's also like, hey, if you put your ducks in a row, let's say that you paid off your debt, you have a healthy emergency fund, let's say 6 months to a year, and you're like, hey, I've got this business idea and I've tested it out on the side as a side hustle, you know, that could be a way to say, hey, you know, is this a time to consider jumping from the employer to doing your thing full time, which is a completely different conversation. But, you know, it's like you're not just limited to your current employer. You could go to the competition. You're not just limited to the competition. You could also work for yourself. So like the opportunities are just endless.
It is. Well, we talked a little about different types of debt, and I want to talk about that because I do think that there are some models out there, and I think of like the Dave Ramsey model, and not to put it down, but like they bucket all debt as debt. And like you just need to eliminate your debt at all costs. Whereas I kind of view debt, and I want to get your opinion on this, is that there's different types, right? So you have your consumer debt, which I view as credit cards, personal loans, potentially auto loans. I have student debt, which I personally like student debt should be in its own bucket. And like we treat this very differently. And then you have mortgage debt for your house. And I think we kind of, that's like a hybrid of the two almost. Like, and I think when you're thinking about how to pay off debt, I'm very big on the aggressiveness when it comes to the consumer stuff, the credit cards, personal loans, auto loans, snowball that, avalanche it, eliminate that as fast as you can. Student loan debt, it depends on the kinds you have, but for a lot of people, you know, I would say 51% of Americans, you should pay as little as you can to your student loan debt because there's so many options for forgiveness. The student loan pause is happening right now. Like you should not be paying anything to your student loans right now if you have federal student loans that are paused. And then mortgages, it's this hybrid, right? Like I've never known someone that has regretted paying off their house. But on the flip side, like, you know, you have a really asset there that you live in that you might not need to eliminate. So I don't know. What do you think? Do you treat all debt as the same, Deacon? Or do you kind of hybrid it out like I'm talking about?
I will say I definitely don't treat it all the same. I would say typically I would separate the mortgage from all the rest of the debt, right? So I view that as very separate. You have an asset, you have a house that you have to live in. And so we can kind of put that aside for right now. What I will say, having dealt with people, because I definitely agree with you, there are, let's say, people that work in the public school system, right? And they have public, you know, they have forgiveness options to them, and they work for so many years and they meet all the criteria that could be forgiven, right? But I've also run into people that, like, they just make the minimum payments, and actually it keeps growing in debt because they're not making enough to pay down the principal, right? And so I was talking to a guy recently where I was like, hey, what are your student loan payments? He's like, $1,000, right? And like, you know, when you do the math on it, you're like, this could last for a long time, right? Like, it's not like, hey, yes, this is a priority, let's go pay it off. But like, if you have no credit card debt, you have no car loan, and you've got $1,000 in student loan debt, this might be a place for you to start to tackle, right? But I'm with you. It's not a cookie cutter. That's the one thing with Ramsey. It's very cookie cutter, right? It's really kind of like you have to take in mind what is your personal situation. And so for me, we put my wife's student loans and my student loans in the equation for the $52,000, partly because it was, I think, $27,000 of debt, right? We're newly out of college, we got new jobs, and we're motivated, and we're like, hey, let's use our extra money to pay this off so that we now have an extra $1,000 a month to save up for vacations, to invest in the stock market. And so, you know, it really does take evaluating your situation. What debt do you have? Like Robert said, I would instantly pay off credit card debt because you're at, you know, 15 to 20% there. You know, personal loans for sure. Car loans, you know, I just don't like having a payment that's stretched out for a certain period of term. So let's just say, you know, you're presuming upon the future that you're going to have the same job, that you're going to have the same income, that you're going to be able to afford this payment. So it's not necessarily in my mind as much a mathematical equation as how secure is your personal, you know, employment situation. And if it's not solid, you're like, hey, you're going to have a $700 a month payment, whether or not you have a job. And are you still going to be able to swing that? And are you going to want to swing that? So those are the type of questions I think people have to wrestle through and ask themselves when they're addressing their debt to say, hey, which debt really is a priority, and kind of listing it using either method, the debt snowball, debt avalanche, and just tackling it.
And that's a great call. And I think it goes back to what we talked about at the top of the show here is getting organized, listing out those debts so that you can know exactly what you have, know exactly where you stand. I'm just a big believer, especially with federal student loans, is you're at zero payment due, 0% interest. So now is a great time to actually snowball into all the other stuff. You know, put that aside. You know, don't give the government any extra money that they don't deserve. You know, like, that's your money. Use your money effectively to knock out your stuff and better your own personal financial situation. And then, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty there on the student loan front with, is there going to be forgiveness? Will the student loan pause get extended longer? And now the new student loan repayment plan, Deacon, is going to hopefully avoid that exact scenario that you just talked about, where you don't make enough to pay the full amount of debt. So like, your balance keeps growing and growing and growing. Well, this new student loan repayment plan that will likely start next year will cap the growth of the loan. So if your minimum payment isn't enough to make the monthly payment, well, your interest isn't going to grow. Your loan that basically what you took out is the max your loan will ever be under the new repayment plan rules, called modified repay. There's no official name for it yet, but next year, hopefully, which that'll be a great win for borrowers, right? Because if you can't afford it, you're on an income-driven repayment plan, you're not going to see that scenario that we have seen unfolded in the past. Cool. Well, with that in mind, you talked about side hustling. You were selling stuff with your aunt. You talked about asking your employer for a raise. Like, what are some other ways that we can tackle the gap of your budget? Like, you're organized. You can't figure out where you're getting that extra money from. I always think this is like the hurdle for most people. Like, what are some other ideas? Hopefully, maybe we can spark some ideas for people that are listening to this.
Yeah, what I love to do is start with people's skill sets, right? So let's just say you're good with computers. And you're like, hey, people will pay. In fact, today I helped my grandma. She had issues with her computer, and I went to her house, and you know, and she would have I mean, I'm a grandson, so I didn't charge her anything, but she would have probably paid 50 to 75 bucks for an hour to have someone because she has no idea how to fix whatever what's going on. Right. So, so you kind of start with your skill set. Maybe you're a graphic designer. Maybe you did hair, you know, you cut hair when you were in college. Like you figure out like, what are the things that you have the capacity to do? And then figure out a way to market that capacity. Right. That's the first place. The second place would be, we have such an amazing gig economy, right? It's like, you could work for Instacart, you could work for DoorDash, you could work, you know, Uber, like there's just a plethora of options out there. I can't believe I just used the word plethora, but there's so many options out there where you can actually make money on a flexible schedule, no matter what your work schedule is. So those are the, like kind of the two places, start with your skills and then look at a gig economy app and say, is that something that I could do? And how much, you know, effort can you put towards it?
I love that the gig economy stuff, because we live in this day and age where you got this device right here, mm-hmm. and you can download something and in maybe less than a few hours potentially go earn something. I think a mm-hmm. lot of people also don't realize that many of these gig economy apps allow you to cash out like immediately. So right. like you could literally go deliver that food and then hit a button on your phone and you have money in your bank account. But I think what a lot of people get hung up on is that like, it's not a lot of money. And this is one of the most frustrating things. It's like, I delivered and did all this food and I only made like, you know, $42 after all my expenses and, you know, no one tipped and all this stuff. And like, what do you kind of say to that? Like, because, you know, everyone has like their reasons why they don't want to do it. And then they want to complain that they can't make their ends meet. But like, what's your biggest thing to say to people that are frustrated that they might not earn a lot, right?
Yeah, I think so. For us, one of the things that I think is important is having a target, right? So for us, we had 52 grand in debt. I didn't just say, hey, I want to pay off my debt. I said, I wanted to pay off our debt in 18 months. The reason why I picked that time frame was Dave Ramsey on his Financial Peace University box said, the average person gets out of debt in 18 to 24 months. And I was like, okay, well, people can do it in 18 months. So I'm going to set that as a goal. Well, when I did that, I didn't realize it, but now it sends like it actually establishes a financial target I need to hit each month to pay off that 52 grand, right? So it's kind of like, how much do I need to work extra in order to make that happen in 18 months? So I'm going to make it simple because 52 grand and I sold a car. There was a lot of parts to that. But let's just say you had $18,000 of debt. You want to pay it off in 18 months. That means you need to come up with an extra grand a month. So you're like, okay, maybe I make $42 per, you know, per day. So we're talking about, and I could work 3 days a week. So we're looking at 120 bucks a week times four is 480. You're halfway there. So now you're like, hey, can I cut my expenses more? Can I do an extra shift to get an extra 42 bucks, right? So even though that one instance is only 42 bucks, it compounds on itself over time to help you achieve your goal. And if you set like a timely goal of 18 months or 2 years, then there's this window where you're like, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. It doesn't feel like 5 or 10 years away. It's like, no, I could actually see this in the next 2 years. That'd be amazing. So I think setting that timeline makes a huge difference in kind of weathering the storm when you're not making a lot of money, but knowing that, hey, it's making enough to get me where I want to be in the time frame that I specified.
And I think that's it. I think people dismiss the power of small numbers and how that small number compounds. Like, again, I think the social media day and age, it's like, if you don't like go out and like make $10,000 a month, like you've suddenly failed. And it's like, that's not the case. None of us started there. None of us worked there. You start making $5, $10 at a time. And then you do that again the next day. And then you do that again the next day. And then that starts to grow and compound and you pay it off. And so, you know, I also think a lot of people have like fear of judgment from their friends and family for doing this stuff. You know, like, what do you mean you're going to deliver for food? Like, and the people will think of you kind of like they're, you feel at least judged. And I think that psychological aspect of this is very hard for a lot of people, because I think they have this failure mentality, like somehow I've failed because like I'm doing this, you know, or somehow I've let my family and friends down because like I need to do this. And I want you to think about the fact that you're always getting judged. You've been judged since you were in high school. You're being judged right now. and may not say it to your face, but they're thinking about it. They are. Yeah. And then you want to know something, they're also going to judge you again in like 3 or 4 years when you suddenly are debt free and maybe you're buying that first house. And they're not going to remember that you actually did this. They're just going to have that, oh, did you see how Deacon, like, they're buying their first house. Like, how'd that happen? And they're going to forget somehow that you were out there hustling and doing all this extra work. So I think there's a big psychological hangup too. I don't know. Did you encounter any of that, Deacon? Like, I don't know.
I think a lot of it is we think about that more than actually is happening, right? Like, so, you know, when we go out to eat, and still to this day, for the most part, we'll order waters, right? Unless I'm going to have beers with some buddies or something. But it's like, you kind of think like, well, I could afford a soda or an iced tea or whatever, but you're like, gosh, you're charging me $4 for this thing. And then after two, that's $8. And then you're like, I'm paying, and then with tip, you're like, I'm paying $10 for just drinks, you know? And so you do get kind of self-conscious of like, well, I should be able to afford this, right? Like, why can't I buy iced tea at going out to dinner with my wife, right? But the reality is like, when you have that goal of like, I could care less about that now. It's like, no, I want to achieve financial independence. I want to be able to set up my family so that they don't have to worry about money, right? I want to change, you know, the generations that I grew up where my mom was on welfare to where my kids will never have to experience that type of lifestyle. And so it's like, those things motivate me to be like, hey, I'll sacrifice a little bit. Even if someone's going to judge me or be like, dude, why don't you buy a soda when you're here? You're like, because I don't need to, right? Like, I care about other things that are more important to me. So I think there is something to kind of exercising that muscle of like confidence of like, no, I know where I'm going. I know why I'm going there. And people might say things, but oftentimes they're saying it because they don't have the strength to do it themselves, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, I don't know if I could do that, right? I have a family member that didn't want to use coupons because it just was a pride thing. You're like, but coupon saving, it's like instant savings. Like, yes, maybe you're putting 5 or 10 coupons, but like saved you $15, right? It took little effort, you know? So I think a little bit is just kind of understanding that that's just part of the way the world works. And then just having the confidence to be like, hey, it's not going to phase me. I'm just going to keep going.
And that's great. And I think you need to have that confidence, but it comes from having that plan, right? Too. So it's like, if you have your plan, you can be like, hey, yeah, I am driving for Uber or whatever, delivering food because I want to make $500 more this month. That's my goal. And I think people don't realize, like, you know, that's even a possible goal, but it really is. Mm-hmm. And you could do that. On the coupons, Deacon, though, you did remind me of a hilarious story I had when I was working. And I want to share this with you because you can't take couponing too far. And this is where the couponing goes too far is we were doing lunch one day as a team. So there was like 7 of us in the office and we're like, hey, we're going to go to this place and we're all going to order. And so one guy was taking down everyone's order because he was going to run and get it. And we go around the table and this guy, one of our coworkers, had this book out and he looked at me and he's like, you ordered an entree, right? And then he looked at one of the other guys at the table. And he's like, you ordered an entree, right? And he's like, okay, well, here's my coupon because it's 2 entrees, get 1 free. And mine's free, guys. And he just like was dead serious about like he wasn't paying for lunch because 2 of us ordered entrees that his entree was going to be free. And we were all like, seriously, dude? Like, I don't know. So you can take it a little bit too far. Don't put yourself at the expense of others, but save money. You should have just said like, hey, I got coupons we can all save and we'll split the bill other ways around. But like, you know, don't be the awkward one when it comes to coupons.
Oh, for sure. And the other thing is, I think something else that I think is worth touching on is the inspiration that it can be silently to other people. So my in-laws were deep in debt and they watched us pay off our debt. And after doing it, my mother-in-law was like, can you help me do the same thing? And I was like, really? Like, they lived a very different lifestyle. They had a couple of homes. They had a BMW. Like, it was like they had a credit card debt, but they were willing to make the sacrifice because they saw somebody else do it, right? And then they paid off $400,000 in like 4.5 years. It was insane. But it was because they saw somebody else doing it, the sacrifices that we were doing, that they were like, hey, I could do that too, right? It might be hard, but I saw somebody else do it. I know it's possible.
And I think, I mean, you just hit the nail on another head that I think goes hand in hand with this is that old saying is that you are who you surround yourself with, or, you know, you're the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. Right. Those kind of sayings, I think, bode true. They bode true both on the success track. So like if you align yourself with people that are moving in the right direction, but I think they really also do align themselves in the debt track. If you are surrounded by people that, you know, are, you know, spending beyond their means and, you know, not having any incentive to like change their situation and living paycheck to paycheck, you know, you kind of find yourself there. And then it's hard, right? Because you don't want to be that, it's hard to be that friend that's like being so different than all the other friends that you hang out with when, you know, they're the ones that could be holding you back because every weekend they're sitting there and, you know, buying, you know, sports packages on TV and, you know, living on their credit card and paycheck to paycheck. And you're trying to break that cycle, right?
Oh, absolutely. Like, and I think that was part of it. The good thing is we actually had another couple that was newly married and they're like, hey, we're going to do this as well. So like, we felt like we had other people that, like you said, we had other people that were on the same mission that aren't going to judge us. They're like, this is what we want to do. And it's a priority. And so, yeah, finding those people that can kind of encourage you and keep moving was a huge for us, you know.
If you don't have those people though, at least at first glance in your life, like where do you think people can find some more like-minded motivation or energy, right? Like, because right. It can be hard, right? If you don't know them, where do you go? What do you do?
There's this website called thecollegeinvestor.com. No, but I mean, honestly, I think following influencers that are teaching the things that you resonate with you, right? So, you know, following, you know, on Instagram, The College Investor, Well-Kept Wallet, joining, you know, Facebook groups that help you, that are going to help you stay on track. You know, I think, you know, there's lots of ways that you can, you know, have conversations with people that you know currently and kind of say, hey, is this something you've ever gone through, right? Maybe it's your parents, maybe it's a brother or sister or cousin or whatever it might be. And learning from them and be like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that you did the debt snowball 10 years ago. Like, can you tell me how that worked for you? Right. So maybe it just open up conversations with people that you already know and kind of figure out who the people would be good to kind of keep having these conversations with.
I love that because I think that really is the way we are migrating, especially if you're younger, finding those influencers, whether it's on TikTok, YouTube, you know, Instagram, Facebook groups, I think are also solid, but like, make sure that you're in a good one. Like maybe it's done by an influencer that you respect and follow as well. You know, we have our investing in personal finance Facebook group. I know there's ones like the Choose Fi, like on the financial independence side, there's a lot of Facebook groups that are around financial independence. And I think people think that's like the step beyond like what we're talking about, but they really do go like hand in hand of getting on the path. And again, people have been there. A lot of them are like, oh yeah, like, and they love to help and talk about money. Basically, you want to find these groups where people are very open about money conversations versus very closed in. You know, again, I don't want to dismiss, you know, the Dave Ramsey, but this is where like a financial peace university, in my opinion, does have a lot of value.
Right.
Because you get with a group of people. You know, yes, it's in a church setting potentially, but you know, they're all in the same kind of place, and you know, some are smaller, some are bigger groups, and you know, maybe they're very rigid and stuff, but at least you can connect with some people that are on your journey, or at least share the goal of being on your journey, and you can have those conversations. So I think that's a great one as well.
Yeah. And I think it's a good point. So I've actually led several of those FPU classes. And what I think is really cool about it is they do an exercise at the beginning of the class where they I don't know if it's the first or second lesson, where you total up your debt and put it on a piece of paper and hand it in anonymously. Right. So now everybody in the class has had it in their debt and they total it up. And then at the end of the class, 9 weeks, they have everybody do the same exercise. And you see that like, hey, in this 9 weeks, us collectively, we paid off $110,000 of debt, right? And we, you know, stop using 3 credit cards per person or whatever it is, right? Like they have savings too, right? So it's kind of like, you feel like you're not alone. You're with other people on a similar path. And so I echo what you say, Robert, that could be an option as well.
Yeah. So we kind of talked about these strategies, we're getting organized, we're talking about side hustles, but it can be really frustrating in the face of inflation and uncertainty that we're feeling right now, right? So like we've alluded to egg prices, food prices as a whole, man, getting anything done, like any kind of repair work, is just like, boom, like the costs are crazy these days. And then, you know, people are losing their jobs. And granted, we're actually seeing a lot of white collar employees. So like the tech industries, the service industries, they're the ones that are losing their employment. But on the flip side, we have this massive job shortage in the blue collar sector. So, that's why a lot of people say that we're probably not going to have a recession, but we're going to have this massive reorganization where people just weren't in the right sectors. Like, we did not need so many service and HR professionals. We needed plumbers. And people at some point in time need to start shifting into these industries. And some of them are very high paying industries. But like, what do you do? Like, you know, I made a budget for January and now my February budget is already like bumping up right against it because like my grocery bill is $200 higher. I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough environment, especially on the consumables, like you're talking about, like going to the grocery store, even eating out, the home repair stuff, as you mentioned. I think that really it comes down to setting a budget and sticking to it and being kind of creative. Right. So let's just say, you know, like you said, you have a January budget and you're set for this, but you're like, hey, you know, I don't need X, Y, or Z at the grocery store this month. Right. Like I can push that off to February, but you're not going to do that unless you go through your budget and say, hey, you know what? I've got 18 rolls of toilet paper inside the cabinet. That's not something that I need for this round. Right. So it is like being a little bit more intentional, a little bit more in tune with like where you're at. Eggs, it could be an alternative, right? You're like, hey, I love eating eggs, but at the same time, I could eat oatmeal. I could have Honey Nut Cheerios, whatever the option is. So finding alternatives for the things that have gone up in price. Some of these things like the eggs went up in price because of one of the largest bird flus in history, right? So it's like, that's a kind of a little bit on its own. It's not because of COVID necessarily, right? It's because of some fluke. And so it's kind of like, hey, you can work around that by just planning and having different alternatives. I know there's also like local chicken farmers, right? People that they'll, my wife was asking this. She's like, we have friends that have 12 chickens and they lay like one egg a day. So that's 12 eggs a day times 30. Like there's no way they're eating 360 eggs. Like we could go over and ask them, you know, can we pay you some money for this? Right. So it's just kind of being creative and not just kind of the norm of like, I'm going to go to the grocery store and pay what they're saying. One other tip that I learned recently that was just blew my mind is checking the price per ounce on things. So I went to a grocery store. I did the segment for a local TV station and there was a bag of chicken nuggets was 80 cents per ounce. And another one was 18 cents per ounce, which means you're paying four times as much for a bag of chicken nuggets. Right. So it's just being an informed consumer and making these kind of these adjustments.
I think you're right. And I think now's the day too, where, you know, I think that you need to shop online as much as you need to shop in stores. Mm. So, you know, going on Amazon and grocery delivery at my area is significantly cheaper than the grocery store for a vast majority of products and services. And even with the delivery fee, you might be at a lower price point. And I know this from my Target days is going on the app and going to target.com might have a lower price than what you find in the store because those stores set their prices based on their local competition and Target.com does not. And I know Walmart does the same thing. So you can price match too. If you pull it up on the app, they'll match the price in the store or you can just, you know, order it online as well. I think it's now's the time to be hyper vigilant in what that pricing looks like. Most places have price match policies. Most places do that kind of thing. So like, groceries are a little harder, right? But like anything that's a consumer good, like shop around, price match, look for coupons, look for discounts online. I mean, I feel like there's like about 15 different like browser plugins these days that like find savings for you and like get you cash back, right? So some of my other favorite ones are Rakuten, which used to be Ebates or, you know, Cashback Rewards. You know, but then you combo that with like a cashback reward credit card, which I know you're trying to pay off debt, but if you use your credit card responsibly and pay it off every single month, it's like you could get like 5% cash back plus another 2% cash back, you know, plus any coupons and discounts you find. It's like you can start stacking up the savings. And again, like we touched on earlier, it might not seem like it goes a long way, but again, $4 here, $2 here. By the end of the month, you're at $100 in savings. And then you see these headlines where, you know, the average American can't pay for a $400 emergency. Well, it's just like, you know, you're 25% of your emergency fund just in figuring out some savings hacks along the way of your grocery shopping, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that. So there's two things. Like, I think the credit card thing, as long as you pay it off every month on time without getting any fees or paying any interest, I'm with you there. Like, you maximize those rewards where you can. And then the other thing, like Capital One Shopping is another one. I don't know if that's one that you use, but I'm like, I'm surprised. I'll just be on a website and it will say there's a 25% discount. And I'm like, I wasn't really looking for a discount, but it just brought it to my attention. Right. So using those tools can definitely save you a lot of money and, you know, give you the money you need to have the emergency fund to pay off the extra debt, et cetera.
Yeah, I'll show this one. This one's a kind of interesting tool. And, you know, it looks like a 1990s website, but it's called Cashback Monitor. And it aggregates all these offers for you. So you can see, like, right now you can get 4% back at Walmart. And then you click it and it'll tell you all of the different places where you can get it. So right now at, like, whatever Hoopla Dupla is, rebates, top cashback we talked about, inbox dollars, you know, and then here's like Citi, Rakuten. And then if you're into the miles or points or other things, like, you can do that. But like Cashback Monitor is one of my favorites to do this because it has a lot of these places that you might normally shop. Walmart's one that I use, Sam's Club up to 12%. And then you can kind of see what happens and then like it clicks through. And of course they get a little kickback if you do it, but, you know, that's the savings for your wallet and that's your pocket. And again, if you don't know if you can save it, that's a non-plugin base. I'm not a fan of the browser plugins. It's not my jam, but like that's a real website you can go to that does basically the exact same thing and helps you find great deals on how to save on the shopping you already do. I'm not asking you to even change your life here. I'm just asking you to save more money on what you're actually already doing, right?
Well, now let me ask you, because maybe people are wondering this too. What's your thing about the extensions that you don't like?
It just gets too cluttered. And I don't know. I also do care a little bit about security. I don't know what all these things do and whatnot. So one, I like the minimalist thing. Two, like, I don't like all these things plugged into my site. I don't really know. And then, you know, I am also bad about using them. I probably do most of my stuff on mobile anyways. And so I don't even know if extensions can be on mobile. I'm tech savvy, but maybe not that tech savvy. And I know a website works on mobile. I just click it and you're moving on, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of times, even the apps, right? So they'll have an app for it versus having an extension. You can download the app, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And I know, but extensions, hey, if it's your thing, go do the extensions. I'm just trying to help you save some money. Do you in your style that's there. What do you think about subscription services, Deacon?
Oh man. Well, I hate them. Number one, I'm like, I wish you could just charge me one time. I actually went through recently and I cut three things out of our budget, right? So that's a great exercise to do if you haven't done it in a while. It's like, hey, what subscriptions am I paying for that maybe I no longer use? And that could be an extra 10, 30, 50 bucks a month is what it ended up being for us after I cut three different things. So, you know, I think they can be helpful, but they add up, right? It's like you cancel your cable bill, but now you have Hulu, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, ESPN, and you're like, I'm paying the same amount that I was paying before, but now I have all these different apps I have to use to get the same thing, right? So it's really just kind of, it's this, you got to do what's best for you and you have to kind of evaluate how much do you want to spend in that category because it can add up fast.
It can. And I did the same thing recently. I actually did it for my business as well. Like, are there business tools and subscriptions that I'm not using? And then personal. And then I'd also challenge you, are there ways that you can get those subscriptions for free? Because I think a lot of people, I found this with, you know, one of my friends that they were paying for Disney and they had Verizon, and Verizon's cell phone plan gives them the Disney bundle for free. All they had to do was click a few buttons and connect their accounts. So it's like you were paying for something that you didn't even actually need to pay for. So I would challenge you to, beyond just reviewing your subscription pricing and ask yourself if you use it, see if there's ways that you could get it for free. I know also some credit cards, for example, like American Express, they have some promotions and different things where, like, if you pay for it, they'll give you a credit every statement, things like that. But where they get you is a lot of these change after like 6 months or a year. So you have to keep checking back on it, right? They'll give you like 1 year for free, and then they start billing you, right? So you might think that you had it for free, and then this year you're like, where'd this come from? So you need to make sure that you're always checking your statements, which goes back again to being organized with your finances for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, do you have any last tips and tricks for getting out of budget in 2023? And if anyone has a question, Jerry had one earlier, we'd love to answer it, share it, drop it in the comments. But any last tips or tricks, Deacon?
Yeah, I would just say it's never too late, right? So, I mean, some people might be watching this and they're like, oh, it's too late for me to kind of do this. Like, it's really not. It's really putting your stuff on paper, putting together a budget, listing your debts, creating a plan. Everybody's situation is different. It might take you longer, but it's possible, right? And so really just being on lives like this, following the right types of influencers that are going to help you achieve your financial goals, and surrounding yourself, like we talked about earlier, with people that are going to help you get there. I think it's possible if you're watching this, and like Robert and I are available. If you ever have questions about your finances, we're here to help.
Absolutely. And don't think that you have to do it so much at once. I think that's just, it's a mindset shift of going from like, there's going to be one big event that pays off all my debt versus it's going to be a pattern of a bunch of small things every single week, every single month that I'm just going to throw up and I'm going to start knocking this down. And, you know, yes, there's a story of somebody out there that, you know, got a bonus and paid off their debt, got their tax refund and paid off their debt, hit the lottery. I don't know. But 99.9% of everybody is really just taking small chips away at it and knocking it out. And then after 6 months, a year, 18 months, they're debt free. It's not an overnight thing. And I think that's the hardest thing to break right now with everything is everything to do with your money. And now I'm gonna broaden this out a little bit, but whether you're talking about getting out of debt, saving, investing, building wealth, all of it is a long-term activity. And the day-to-day is not very fun and sexy, and it doesn't really feel good. Like, but when you look at the year mark, it starts feeling a little better, but usually even then it's not that like exciting, right? It takes time and effort. But you know, the 5-year mark, you're starting to see some real like things, and then like it keeps growing and growing. And that's what compound interest does. That's what making a bunch of small activities does every single day. That's where you start seeing the results. You got to kind of zoom out, but like none of us can really zoom out. We're humans. We're not built to do that. But I would encourage you to look at your life 5 years ago, go look through your phone pictures, see what you were doing then. And realize that for a lot of us, our lives were very different. We were probably in a different spot financially, with friends and family, with where we're living, you know, all that. And then think about today and then realize that you're going to have another snapshot in 5 years and it's going to be very different as well. Because it's really hard to see through the day to day. And I want people to stay motivated on this process. And I think a lot of what we talked about today is having a plan, getting organized, making a bunch of small moves. That's what gets you there over time, right?
That's right, man.
Cool, man. Well, this was fun, Deacon. I appreciate you hopping on. Last minute guest, and this was a lot of fun for our, I think this is our fourth College Investor Live now. So, you know, we've been having a lot of fun with these, and I'm going to be turning these into a podcast, Deacon. So I think we're going to have a College Investor Money Conversations that you'll get to hear this again into perpetuity. So
that's awesome.
Right. Cool, man. Well, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next week.